call the next case.
You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Gary Heisner. I'm a member of the Virginia Bar and Helen Crozier. Let me set the stage in this case, because it's highly unusual. In this case, we have a defendant who made one appearance and during a scheduling conference, and he failed to show up the rest of the time. He was found to be in default. That defendant submitted one document. That document was stricken because it was not responsive. In fact, it was quite ambiguous. It really didn't make much sense. It was handwritten. Again, that was stricken. There was a hearing, an ex parte hearing on damages. That hearing took place without the defendant present, without any pleadings of the defendant. What is unusual in this particular situation is that the judge, sua sponte, raised a statutory bar defense, apparently on behalf of the defendant. Now, this breaks a lot of rules in the Virginia legal system. First of all, it was a hearing on damages, not on the merits. Pursuant to Funkhauser v. Million, that's totally improper. Next, the fact finder was the judge who raised the statutory bar issue. That was improper. Next, the statutory bar defense must be raised in the pleadings. There were no pleadings. Next, the burden is on the defendant. There was no defendant, unless, of course, the judge was standing in for the defendant. Therefore, it was improper. Next, there was no choice as for the plaintiff as to who was going to be the fact finder. That's improper in the Commonwealth of Virginia. In fact, that's unconstitutional. When you're dealing with facts, the plaintiff has the right, in the case of a statutory bar issue, to select who the fact finder is. It could be the judge. It could be a jury. In this instance, the fact finder was the person asserting the statutory bar defense. I know it's extremely convoluted, but nevertheless, it happened in this particular situation.
May I interrupt you for a minute? Yeah. This is going to sound like a hostile question, but it's not, so follow it with me.
Yeah.
After the entry of default, not a default judgment, but the entry of default,
right,
in the state system or the federal system, you're obviously quite right that affirmative defenses by the non-appearing defendant cannot be raised by anyone.
Right.
Unless, of course, they go to the court's subject matter jurisdiction or there's some special exception. And there are a couple, but obviously none for statute of limitations. But after entry of default, when the judge, the state judge, gets to the hearing, they obviously damages is on the table, but isn't the prima facie pleading also on the table? Not that there's any question as to your prima facie pleading, but doesn't the court have the obligation of asking itself, as a matter of law, if these allegations are true, it does actually state a viable claim under Virginia law? Again, I'm not suggesting yours doesn't, but when you Your argument today in a brief seems to think the
whole.
Okay.
We have a 200-year tradition of requiring that these statutory bars claims must be in the pleading.
I'm completely agreeing with you. I'm not talking about.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is there's a duty on the part of the trial judge to make sure that there is not perhaps a statutory bar?
No, I didn't say it clearly. No, that would be an affirmative defense, and trial judges don't have that authority. And
right.
As best I can tell, all of your cases and 100 cases, and on top of it, say exactly the same thing.
Right.
The judges don't raise affirmative defenses on behalf of non-appearing defendants.
Except in this case.
Yeah, except in this case. But it's not just the ruling in your case that matters to us. It's the way the law evolves. And I just want to make sure I'm not misunderstanding you. The judge, as I understand it, and correct me if you disagree, still has to make a prima facie analysis. That is, look only at the complaint, no affirmative defenses of any kind, and ask yourself, if these allegations are true, and I'm going to assume they're all true because it's in default, does it state a hypothetically legally valid claim? Isn't that still part of the final screening of the trial judge after default at the time of entry of final judgment on the default?
I would look at the Funkhauser case, Funkhauser v. Million. This was a hearing on damages. That judge had absolutely no right to start arguing the merits or reviewing the merits. We were just dealing with damages. The horse had already left the barn a long time ago.
Right, you can't get to the merits, but in Funkhauser, the pled facts stated a viable cause of action as a matter of law. And the error of the trial court was going beyond that, going like beyond a pure demur analysis. I'm not communicating very well. You move on to your next point.
Yes, the judge did not raise any defects in the pleading itself. There were no defects in the pleading itself. It was clear that everything was proper in the pleading.
You pled a garden variety breach contract, right?
Yeah, it was a garden variety breach.
So, in other words, it's not an instance where someone has some essentially outlier, crazy claim or whatever, gets a default judgment, and the court is looking at this thing. You mean I'm supposed to enforce this? I mean...
Right.
Right. I may be misunderstanding, but I think that's what Justice Kelsey was getting at is, you know, we deal with a case that's in front of us, but then our precedent's going to address future cases that may not be as clean or as garden variety.
In response to the two justices, it was a really clear, clean-cut case. The contract was a written contract. There was a default. There was nothing complex about it. There was really nothing to analyze. It was very straightforward. It just got mucked up because of the trial court's raising of the statutory bar issue. It was just extremely odd. During a hearing, ex parte hearing on damages, it's not quite clear, you know, it's quite odd.
Perhaps why we granted the writ.
Yes. And to add to the oddity, that trial judge refused to sign the written statement. Obviously, there was no court reporter there, because one did not expect during a hearing on damages to have anything that needed to be recorded. And she refused to sign that, too. Again, another oddity. There were so many oddities in this case, it's rather odd. In this particular case, the judge was acting as the judge. The judge was acting as the fact finder. The judge was acting as the stand-in for the defendant. And this raises all sorts of questions about, you know, how viable this approach was. And it simply doesn't make sense under Virginia law. I think, very, very clear cut. I don't see anything else that needs to be dealt with in my oral arguments. Is there anything else? I don't need the additional time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Call the next case.